elevator takes over and everybody
scares.
You
guys
got
that?
Yeah. So we're here just because 90.3 still belongs to the community. RFID is very much alive. And who would have thought 1 year later that the FCC hadn't approved? It's unprecedented.
Yeah,
so we raised some very serious questions, right? So how much money do you think you guys have spent in the last year?
No, I don't even know.
Because our lawyer kind of estimated, doing really conservative guesses in terms of salaries that are being paid and legal fees, and his number was somewhere around 1.4 or 1.5 million.
I don't know if it's been that much. I don't think it's been quite that much, but I'm not positive either. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go back and look.
And with the city of San Francisco, with such support for the efforts to save KUSF, the Board of Supervisors passing the resolution today, John Avalos, who ran for mayor and is still on the board, put out a press release introducing an ordinance that the city will be creating to protect community radio. How come it seems like CPRN hasn't listened to that and hasn't said, you know what, maybe the city's right, maybe this is a bad deal for San Francisco. Maybe we need to take a step back and rethink this.
Well, we really think the city deserves a great classical music station as well as community radio. So we're not opposed to community radio at all, but we also think that it's important to have a classical music station for the community. And it, you know, ideally it wouldn't be an either or choice, ideally.
Mm-hmm. And then so who's paying the salaries now at KDMCU? Where does that money come from?
Well, we have some startup operating funds from the University of Southern California. We've also gotten donations from the community.
And so I get confused. It's, when we try to explain to people the sale, it gets confusing because there's CPRN and PRC, and then there's the Entercom involvement, and then there's this loose affiliation with USC. Now, what's the difference between PRC and CPRN? And aren't you on the you're both of them? How does that work?
I'm not involved actually with PRC.
Okay.
It's a separate nonprofit that works in the public radio world. CPRN is a nonprofit that's operating the San Francisco stations. So that's the way that works.
And
CPRN is a separate nonprofit. So it's separate from KUSC and Southern California and the operation that USC has down there.
And then what is PRC?
PRC is a company, it's a nonprofit company that helps keep non-commercial frequencies in the non-commercial sector. So they work actually with community stations, they work with public radio stations, they work with independent operators who want to operate a public station. Essentially, they really got started a few years ago because religious broadcasters were, they had a lot of money, so they were buying up a lot of
right, they started with that. That was really good. It seems now that the collateral damage is that locally programmed community stations are being ripped out. So these sort of satellite stations, like how many stations now does CPRN own in California?
CPRN only has is only up here in the Bay Area.
Okay, well, whatever name came through USC, because isn't this the fifth or sixth station?
Well, they're really separate. This is CPRN
really
only operates. They're complete. They are separate. CPRN operates separately from the Southern California stations. So it's a separate nonprofit, separate staff, separate boards, ultimately separate financials. Everything is separate. It's just operating in the Bay Area. And we have stations in Southern California about, we have six or seven that just serve Southern California. So it's really, this is a locally programmed station. All the programming is done from here. All the staff is here. So that's the way.
One thing people found interesting, one of the first things you guys tried to do after the sale was move the transmitter to Marin. And to everyone, that seemed like very transparent, where it was, here's a much smaller signal that KDFC was used to. And so let's sacrifice San Francisco right now, but let's go to Marin, where the wealthiest donors are. And then it seemed like,
to allow more people to listen to the station. That was what that was for. It still serves San Francisco better, actually. It has by moving a transmitter to Marin, to a professional broadcast site. The way FM works is the higher you are, the more people you serve, the higher your antenna is, because of the way that it's line of sight. So you can actually serve more people in the city of San Francisco from the site in Marin than you can having an antenna on the top of the
building. But the idea anyway is do that while you're looking to get another station in the south of it. I mean,
right.
You've been very clear that
no,
your
absolutely.
Intention is to buy as many stations as possible, right?
I
mean, that's what you said to me on forum last year.
I wouldn't say as many stations as possible because we can't afford that. But our intent is to try to do the best we can to duplicate the prior coverage of 102.1. And, you know, we're never going to be able to really do that. It's not going to be possible. But our goal is to try to, you know, to make the station, to allow the station to be heard by as many people who could hear 102.1.
Doesn't it seem that the only real winners so far in this deal are Entercom? Because here you are, we hear a lot from old KDSC listeners so frustrated that they can't hear the station like they used to.
Absolutely.
And then our community,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Community of San Francisco lost 12 languages of programming.
And many hours of classical programming of KDSC. That
right.
is also what
and
we lost. It's
non-commercial.
Not just,
no, I
part.
Totally understand.
Exactly. So then it seems like the winner in this is Entercom, right? Because they got to move K-Fox in. That was the master plan, right? K-Fox, let's get another generic classic rock station into San Francisco, pump that through. We'll partner with CPRN. We'll dump. We don't have to be the bad guys that kill classical music because we'll give it to this entity that's a little confusing. Sometimes it's CPRN, sometimes it's USC, whatever. So it seems like they're the only ones winning. And as we're sort of in this year of the Occupy movement, it seems that it's that greed again, it's that sort of corporate control of the media, where here we are, a community who has a right to the public airwaves, and that's been ripped away from us.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not opposed to you at all, and I don't consider myself in opposition to you and what you're trying to do. I know it feels that way, but I'm not. I actually am a big fan and supporter of community radio and student radio. I've helped found two student radio stations at two different universities, one of them at USC. So I really, you know, I believe in what you're doing, and I'm not an enemy by any stretch of the imagination. And I do agree with you completely that when you look at the big picture and you look at how radio and television were supposed to work, you know, back in the 1920s when they were setting up how the airwaves were going to be monitored and controlled, the government said, we're going to actually own the airwaves. So the government owns them. No, none of us own the frequencies. But they said, the government wants to own them because we want them to be operated in the public interest. And we want public service to be sort of the core value of how radio and television stations operate. Would I say that that's the core value in most cases? No, I wouldn't. That's why I think non-commercial radio and community radio are important, because I think on the nonprofit side, we have the incentives built into the structure to care about the community and to care about the public and to care about public service and to care about those kind of values. Does the same incentive exist on the commercial end? I would say no, it doesn't. And I think we've moved away.
But don't you think what's happening now is sort of
years
mimicking what Entercom and Clear Channel have been doing on the right side of the dial, when it's, let's get as many non-commercial stations as we can. Like, to me, the monopolization of the left side of the dial is really, really troubling, right? Because I don't disagree. I think some of it started out of good intentions.
Hey, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that...
Then USC had a station. Why do they need one in San Francisco?
Why do you need a conglomerate? And my question is, if it's so non-commercial, all of us little stations that you're so articulately saying you support, each one of us, micro radio stations, whatever, fighting to stay on. Now, somewhere all this startup money came in, because you hadn't turned a profit before you started buying those stations, legal, PR, staff, buildings, how many radio shows, how many things you go on and do this. At the core of it, where is this money coming from that's apart from this line of this shell corporation, this line of the other one? Who's putting out all this money? And
USC it made an initial investment to buy KUSF, hopefully, and the station in Napa, and to provide some startup operating funds, understanding that if we were able to build the stations and the service, that we could then raise money and the stations could support themselves. But the startup operating capital came from USC, and we've been really clear about that in the interest of, you know, being able to, other people have asked that question, and to be transparent about the operation as well.
So USC took this money out of their operating budgets to go out and buy these stations, as opposed to, you know, did somebody else?
USC has...
Is there a connection to Entercom, too? Is there a connection?
No, there's not. You know, Entercom...
Is there any connection where money's flowing in from corporate radio indirectly through a grant or anything else? Or are you saying that the...
No.
That the university itself, a college, is just trying to build this whole state network on its own operating funds?
Yeah, part of the rationale for USC is that outside of Southern California, the most important territory for USC is Northern California. It's the second most important region for them in terms of alumni, prospective students, parents of students, etc. So their idea was they were interested, willing to invest to make certain that a classical music station could continue to exist in Northern California because it's an important region to them. So that was the rationale for them.
And the last question is, what are you doing different than 102.1 that makes this not-for-profit? Classical is not so sacred.
That's
I got brought
question.
Up playing that. Classical is not so sacred that just by putting it on itself, it's a non-commercial act. What I listened to this station with acupuncture needles in me, and all it was doing in a treatment center, all it was doing was trying to sell things.
Yeah, it's a good question because it is different, but the differences, you know, may or may not be apparent to everyone. But what we've done programming-wise is the old KDFC's commercial station was really focused on trying to get as many listeners as possible. So they honestly, by the end, were playing about half film music and crossover music and relatively little, and some classical music. Now we play mostly classical music. We play whole pieces. We play more of the repertoire. We play vocal music. We play a lot of things that they didn't used to play. So we broadened out the playlist and the music programming considerably because we don't have that. You know, what they had to do before us is the Entercom would say, we really need you to have more listeners, 25 to 44. So whatever you need to do to create more listeners, 25 to 44, is what we need you to do. We don't have that. You know, we don't care about that. That's not our world. Like, we have a mission to do classical music. We want to present the repertoire. And we're not kind of held back by those commercial station interests and the need to make a profit. There's no nonprofit. There are very wealthy nonprofits. You know, that's one thing that sometimes people don't understand. They're incredibly wealthy nonprofits. Harvard University is a very wealthy nonprofit. But the definition of a nonprofit is you're not developing profits for shareholders. So individual people aren't getting rich through the work that you're doing, et cetera. Even that's starting to change a little bit, but that's another
seems
topic.
Like you're blurring the lines.
Yeah, really.
You're blurring the lines of, like, what is the commercialization of your station, and is that legal? Can you have commercials on a nonprofit station? So you're blurring the lines of what a nonprofit station is.
Yeah.
There's a big question of the legality of that, and how would you defend that?
Yeah, the FCC is the entity that defines what an underwriting announcement is, which is what non-commercial stations can do, versus a commercial. And they define what they say is, if you're going to do a spot for a business or a nonprofit on a non-commercial station, it can't have a call to action. So you can't say, so come down to the dealership now and buy a BMW, blah, blah, blah. You can't give any information that's qualitative. So you can't say, our product is better than X, Y, or Z. and you can't give price information. So you can't say, so for only $29.99, you can buy 6 Gensu knives. So those are the three things you cannot do on a non-commercial station with regard to an announcement for a company or someone else. So that's the difference. And that's why we can do sponsorship announcements for businesses on the station as long as we don't do those three things. But once you do one or all of those three things, then it crosses over, according to the FCC, and becomes a commercial. So it's odd. And most people don't really, most people don't know or understand the distinction. So if you ask a listener, are there commercials on public radio? They say, yeah, there are commercials on public radio. Because it's sort of a legal definition.
Plus, you said you were trying to do this for prospective students in Northern California and for alumni to procure more donations from alumni and to gain more students in the future. So that is indirectly... directly for profit.
Yeah, it's more for USC. It's really more for having a tangible presence here, since a lot of...
So that potentially you would gain more money, more funds from having as many radio stations as possible and having a name out there just like advertising in any other way.
That could well happen.
Sorry. That's what you want it to happen, or you wouldn't be trying to get as many radio stations as possible. Is that true?
We're really not trying to get as many as possible because we can't afford it. It's
USC
expensive, and we aren't trying to go out there and buy up the whole world. That's really not our goal. But our goal is to try to do the best we can to serve as many of the former 102.1 listeners as we can. So that's the goal.
At the expense of other communities that are smaller,
not.
Don't have
nonprofit mission to keep that profit station
alive.
It is
in the case of KUSF, absolutely. I'm not trying to say that's not an issue.
Another thing that's come up that people are concerned about is that on KDSC's website now, you can buy every song that's played. When you look at your dissertation and you sort of talk about this model of using...
And thank you for being one of the only people who ever read it.
Oh, no, but a lot of people read it. It fueled a lot of our arguments, actually, with the FCC, because we saw the shrewd business plan that was a lot about, online classical music distribution and how you can use terrestrial dials for your advantage in that way. And so isn't that problematic on the non-commercial side of the dial to then just be to link to a for-profit site that you can then buy every song?
Yeah, we really do that not to get money, because to give you an example, at KUSC, we make $20,000 a year from archive music, the relationship we have there. The reason we really do it is as a listener service, because people call us every day and say, I love this piece I heard, where can I buy it? So it's for us, it's really more of making it easier for the listener to be able to buy something that they want. It's not a big money maker for us. At KUSC, we have an annual budget of around $6 million. So, it's $20,000 is not huge money compared to $6 million. So it's not like we do it for the money. We really do it as a listener service in that case.
The other thing that's been troubling is, and it's one of our big arguments that I think is why the FCC is investigating so strongly, is how the premature transfer of power, right? Because 90.3 right now still is owned by USF, right? Mm-hmm. The chief operator at USF didn't even know where it was being broadcast out of. Like, isn't that problematic? Isn't it problematic that they destroyed their own studios? And that officially the chief operator of 90.3 isn't here, has no idea. He thought he wants to answer the question saying, I don't know, I think it's being broadcast out of Oakland. And he just stepped down and they just appointed a new person to be...
Yeah, Michael's going on sabbatical.
He had a miserable year, right? And so the person that's now taking that spot as a science professor, again, zero experience in radio or broadcasting. Isn't that troubling to have the chief operator of this station not be anyone who has any understanding of FCC law or any experience with radio?
Yeah, both Michael and the new chief operator have been trained in FCC rules and regulations.
What was their experience with radio before this?
You know, I think Michael's been involved in the station somewhat, just because it's been in his area. But you know, the FCC has very specific criteria for here's the job description of a chief operator, and Michael has been really he understands that, he's known it, and he's done those duties from our perspective.
How come he didn't know where the music was originating from?
You know, I think he knew. I think he's known, and you know that he's been over here, and you know he's been over there, and so I think he has known all of that. And they dismantled their studios, but they always retained the ability to originate programming.
That's up for debate, because you know we went in there and took a look, and it doesn't look like they could originate anything.
But that, as you pointed out, I mean that's all USF does still on the station. And that's all their responsibility.
Right. So how frustrated have you been with that? I mean, it seems like what we kind of hear is that you guys are really frustrated with USF because they've handled this so poorly, and at the same time, USF is so frustrated with you guys because you assured them this is going to be a done deal, this is going to be easy breezy, and here we are a year later.
No, we never told them it was going to be easy. One of the things that I did from the beginning is talk to them and said, KUSF has a long history, has many people who are very dedicated to the station. They will definitely protest. They will, you know, they won't want the sale to happen. They will protest if all of this stuff is going to happen.
Oh, I thought you couldn't talk to them before the sale happened.
No, we talked.
Hi, you guys.
We talked to them
leave.
About that.
Excuse me, it's got to be.
How come?
This is a private property. I give you some time, but you have to leave now.
If you want, we can go outside and talk.
Sure.
She works up here, and you're putting us up for talking to her.
Downstairs. That's fine.
I'm trying to talk.
That's fine. That's fine. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
No problem.
It's just cold, so I understand. Thank you. Mark is at Public Radio Capital.
Okay. But you said you don't have anything to do with Public Radio Capital.
Well, Public Radio Capital is a minority, has a minority interest in CPR, about 10%.
Okay.
Or
doesn't public media company have a larger?
Yeah,
it's 90% USC.
90% USC, and then 10% is PRC.
Right.
And PMC is not playing.
You know, they have a bunch of companies,
right.
Public Radio Capital. So it's the one that is formally a partner with us is I think called something San Francisco. I mean, it has San Francisco.
Classical San Francisco,
that's
LLC.
It. Yeah, that's the one.
What is that?
It's just they have a lot of LLCs and they operate different ways with different companies, but they're all affiliated and part of, you know, they're. In some cases, they're separate companies, but they all have similar staff, board relationships. So, you know,
it's all kind of the same.
It's all kind of the same.
That was my.
And then CPRN, it gets confusing too, because at one point it was Colorado Public Radio Network.
At one point, like 10, 12 years ago, we started CPRN, and because we were doing a partnership with Colorado Public Radio in Denver. And we were basically working together to create programming together that both of our stations used and that we syndicated nationwide. But maybe five, six years ago, I forget exactly when, we decided not to continue with that business. So we had people who were in CPRN. We transferred them to our two stations and then left CPRN, you know, because we thought maybe we would do something different with the company. So when this came up, we decided to use CPRN as the San Francisco nonprofit. So Colorado Public Radio gave up their interest in CPRN, and that's what we use to start the operation up here.
How many stations are in your
in CPRN
family?
In up here or down in LA?
All together throughout the state.
Let me think. In Southern California, we've got five stations, I think, and a booster station.
Okay.
And then up here,
we're operating KUSF. We own KDFC, which is 89.9 in Napa, Sonoma. And we just have applied to the FCC to purchase a translator in Los Gatos that's operating on 94.
So that'll be great.
So that's pending as well. We don't own that at the moment.
So eight are sort of in the statewide.
And we're looking. We've been very open, as Erwin said, that we're looking for a South Bay station that can serve, you know, more of the peninsula and the South Bay that used to be able to get 102.1 and can't get it anymore.
So you don't see that as consolidation or monopolization of the left side of the dial?
Not in our world so much, because, you know, classical music, we want to have a Northern California station, but the same station can serve classical music listeners pretty well in the South Bay Peninsula, city of San Francisco, elsewhere. The kind of programming that you're doing is what people call these days hyper-local programming. You know, you're really focusing on a community and serving that community. For us, it's sort of our definition of community is larger, but we would feel that we can't serve San Francisco or the Bay Area with the same classical programming that we're serving Southern California. So that's kind of how we look at it. We serve Southern California from the Central Coast, like Morro Bay, down to Northern San Diego and over to Palm Springs. But so it's a big, broad area. But we serve that community with mostly the same programming. We do occasionally do local programming in Palm Springs or local programming in Santa Barbara. But for the most part, we're serving that whole area with one basic signal.
What would your guess be about on KDFC right now, the number of female artists that are played and the number of queer artists that are played and the number of artists of color that are played?
You know, we're probably pretty good on the first two just because of the nature of the programming. There aren't, you know, the number of women classical composers is smaller than the number of men, but the number of women artists, classical artists, is pretty large. People of color are more and more coming into the mix as classical performers and artists, and there are people of color who are noted composers, and we do play that music, but it's probably less so than the number of, if you're looking strictly at people of color versus people who are you know, Western European heritage, you're probably going to get more of a focus on the Western European, for sure.
And so do you think that represents the community of San Francisco?
You know, I think it represents the classical music and arts territory that we represent. It doesn't do what you're doing, you know, for sure. And I'm not going to say that what we're doing is what you're doing, because they are different things, and they have different audiences, and they serve a different purpose. So, you know, am I going to say that we did what do we serve the purpose you were serving? Absolutely not. We don't. Your purpose is unique, and nobody else is going to, you know, is going to be able to come in and touch what you were doing.
So two quick questions. This is just going back to something that you said earlier, so forgive me, but you said something about making distinctions between the Northern California part of the state, the Northern,
right,
and the Southern California part of the state in terms of the way you would program what is basically 100% classical music.
Right.
Could you go into a little bit the differences between the programming in the Southern part of the state and the Northern part of the state, and how that is addressing sort of local?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest issue there is that both regions have a very vibrant arts and culture community, and that they're different and distinct. You know, the San Francisco Symphony is not the LA Phil, and vice versa, and they're different. They're different kinds of organizations with a different focus. So this station needs to reflect the Northern California arts and culture community the way that KUSC reflects Southern California.
And how does it do that?
We do, in Southern California, for example, we do broadcasts of the L.A. Phil, the L.A. Opera, the L.A. Chamber Orchestra, the Pacific Symphony, and the Master Chorale, and a number of other organizations. So those organizations appear on our air in concert,
the same as the San Francisco Symphony.
Oh, I see. So you're broadcasting the San Francisco Symphony instead of the LA Philharmonic. That's
and the San Francisco Opera and the Philharmonia Baroque. So we're broadcasting the local groups.
Okay, gotcha.
Then the other thing that we do is in LA, and we're starting this up here, is doing reporting about local arts and culture. So we have an arts magazine program at KUSC that airs every Saturday morning, and we talk to people in the arts community, we talk about arts events. We really try to promote and advocate for the arts, and we want us to do more, we want to really delve into that more up here. And that's something KDFC has not really done in the past as a commercial station, because, you know, in the commercial world, if it makes money, you do it, and if it doesn't, you don't. But, you know, as a nonprofit, KDFC can really start doing that a lot more.
One of the most sort of respected and prominent voices in the classical music community in San Francisco, especially in sort of all musical community, is the Cronus Quartet. Mm-hmm. And they came out right away against the sale and really opposing this deal and in support of saving KUSF. And how do you respond to that, and what do you think about that?
You know, I respect their view, and I respect your view. I would like to see a world where the people who are doing mission-driven nonprofit radio are not forced to compete with one another. That's what I would like. Because I think, you know, what we have is the area left of 92 on the dial, right? And that's what we have. And we share that with religious broadcasters, with stations licensed to school boards, with community radio, with Pacifica, with public radio, all these different groups, all of which have important voices, share a teeny tiny part of the pie. I would like to see mission-driven radio be a much more important part of the airwaves, period. So as I said before, you know, I know it seems like we're in opposition, but I, you know, in my mind, I would rather not have to compete with that space with people like you who are doing a great job and who care about the community and have been serving the community for a long time. I prefer not to do that.
Instead of competing, you just wiped us out, right?
Yeah, but, you know, here's the other side of it. A station was for sale. Someone was going to buy it, right? So we bought it. And that was a case where, you know, that's the other part of the changing dynamic that we were talking about earlier.
The station didn't have a chance to organize to buy it themselves. What? How? You have something to do with that going forward like that?
Yeah, this
This was Entercom's non-disclosure agreement as opposed to yours. You just sat behind it. Is that what you're saying? You would have liked it if there were other stations you could get without this?
Yeah, I would love it if there was another station I could get without besides this one. I would have loved that, honestly, because, you know, do I really want to be in a fight with you? No, I don't. You know, I feel like we're more on the same side, probably, than I'm on the same side of a commercial station. So do I really want to have this kind of a fight? No, I don't. Do I really want to be on the other side from you? No, I don't. I respect what you're doing. I respect your dedication. I respect the station's long history. I knew about all of that, and that made it made it harder. Now, I'm also not trying to say, though, that, oh, I'm innocent and I did nothing. You know, obviously, I knew what I was doing, and I came in and we bought the station. But again, USF owns the station. It's their station, according to the FCC and according to the way things work. And they have a right to sell it. If they were going to sell it, I had a good use for it. And so that, you know, USC had a good use for it. And so that's the hard part, you know?
It is hard, but just a couple. I mean, let's not forget the primo beneficiary of this sale is Entercom, because they are dumping a somewhat less profitable format and able to bring in a much more profitable format.
They're
so if we are, in fact, opposed to media consolidation, we are, in fact, acting in their interest and salvaging something that, whatever you may think, has been an important part of San Francisco for 35 years. And I don't have to say that. Many other people have said that, including Cronus Quartet. So sometimes we have to look to the app, you know, to the impact of our actions down the line. And this is beneficial to Entercom and not beneficial to the city of San Francisco. One of the questions that I have is, you're talking about, well, it was going to be for sale, somebody had to buy it, might as well be me, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget that the way the sale was done gave really very few other entities any opportunity to bid, certainly not the community that built itself around the station, which could have. So why did you participate in a closed sale that prevented competition? I think it was an anti-competitive maneuver, and you're in partnership with the broker who handled the sale. I'm not exactly seeing that as a triumph of capitalism. It seems like a very managed attempt to basically prevent the community that owns the station and has built it from having any chance to provide an alternative.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's okay. A good point. So, USF really, as the entity selling the station, had the right to do it however they wanted. You know, it wasn't my decision.
Well,
it's
questionable whether they did.
They could, if they had wanted to do an open bidding process, they could have. Sometimes that happens, like it's happening with the TV station in San Mateo, the public station that's being sold, but they're doing an open public bidding process for it.
PRC's
and your
bidding.
Broker is a participant.
You guys are.
We're not.
Well, your broker, yeah.
Well, the people are in partnership with.
Yeah. And I'm sure a bunch of others. I don't know if a bunch of other people, but I'm sure other people will bid.
Do you believe that
well.
USF acted unethically?
They acted the way most radio sales happen. And most radio sales happen with a non-disclosure agreement, and they happen quietly. And part of the reason for that is you don't really know you have a deal. There's a couple of steps you go through. Step one is a letter of intent that says, we intend to buy the station for X price if we can work out the terms of an agreement. So that's basically where you agree on price, and then you say, this is the price, we're not going to negotiate this anymore, and we intend to pay you this price as long as we can negotiate an agreement. Then you go into the process of negotiating an asset purchase agreement, which is a big, big document, takes some time. And many deals fall apart during the asset purchase agreement. You can't reach, agreement on this term or that term, and they fall apart. So that's part of the reason that they tend to be done under a non-disclosure agreement, because you don't want to get everyone all anxious about it if it's going to fall apart, and they usually do.
Correct, because they tried to sell it before, and without doing a non-disclosure agreement, people were able to
mobilize.
Rally, yeah. Mobilize, and they realized they couldn't, because this hyper-local community actually has a lot of power in San Francisco, and it never would have happened if they didn't do it the way they did it, because it didn't happen before.
Yes.
Because this community actually can mobilize, and they would have called into question some of the things like Intercom's involvement in it that would have made it a little bit questionable, and probably they could have this community probably could have competed for the purchase of the station. It was really deceptive. It was really pretty unethical, maybe not illegal, but it wasn't a cool thing to do, and you could have done something else. There's other actions you could have taken, like let the station know that they were up for sale when they didn't even know they were up for sale.
Okay, let me tell you something, and this is not something I've talked about before, but I just want you to know that there was a process before this. About 5 years ago, we were the ones who tried to buy it when it happened a few years ago. I sat down myself with the university and said, this is a long-standing service. This is not going to be an easy endeavor to sell the station. And you've got to really be sure that this is what you want to do. Then the university decided not to buy it. And I sat down with Steve Runyon.
That's because it got leaked. That's because it leaked to the community.
I sat down in a meeting with Steve Runyon, and I said, you have an opportunity here to do something different and to forge a different relationship with the university so that this doesn't happen again. But you've got to do something different. You know, that obviously they're not feeling solid about the station. It's their station. They own it. You don't own it. your announcers don't own it. Just the way that I don't own KUSC. USC owns it. It's their station. It's not my station.
In a larger
you
sense,
have to do, well, you no. have an opportunity.
You are the licensee. Let's not confuse being a licensee
Correct.
With being an owner.
No,
those
absolutely.
Are two different things.
That's absolutely right. Well, point well taken.
Right. Public assets in the end.
Exactly. But the entity that controls the station is the licensee, and that's the entity that controls it as the entity that controls USC is the Board of Trustees of that university. So I sat down with Steve, and I tried really hard to talk to him and say, you really have to do something different here. You dodged a bullet. This station's important. You've been here a long time. You need to do something different. So I just want you to know that I really try, you know, and I did have that conversation with him, and I really encouraged him to try to lob, you know, pull everyone together and forge a different relationship with the university so it wouldn't happen again. Then when the station came on the market again, a year and a half ago or whatever, the university had decided this time they were willing to go through with it. They were done. That other relationship hadn't been forged. And what do you do? You know, so I just want you to know it's not like I haven't tried to talk to Steve and talk to the university about the station, its history, et cetera. It's not like I haven't respected it. But, you know, when push comes to shove, the university has the right to sell it, and they have the right to do it however they want to do it. So, you know, it's now, as we all know, in the FCC's hands, and, you know, we'll have to see how it turns out.
But see whether they do have the right to sell it.
Right. Yes,
under
exactly.
those conditions.
Yeah. Exactly.
One thing that
but
seemed also...
he contacted you. That USF contacted your company this time around. As
you know,
to
X
that
number of years ago, I'm not sure
I mean this
how
sale.
I exactly...
I mean this sale. They contacted you that it was up for sale, or you contacted
broker.
Them?
We heard
okay,
from their broker.
Thanks.
And
thanks.
I, you know, whether the broker had an actual contract with the university at that point... the way brokers usually work is they'll call you and say, there's a station that, you know, that may be for sale, and maybe they haven't even talked to the person, that they don't represent them yet, and then they call the person, we've got a potential buyer for your station. So it's iffy whether there was an actual agreement or not, or if the broker was acting on his own, I don't know. But we got we were contacted by the broker, not by the university.
And I know you worked with USF in preparation of what's going to happen after the sale, right? And to prepare them, I think there's this quote about, be prepared for this vocal minority or something like that. And so the press release that comes out on the 18th smooths over the sale and says, KUSF moves to online format. Do you remember that? Is there a KUSF online format now?
Well, I don't know.
There's not. Okay, and the other...
I know you're broadcasting on
KUSF in Exile has nothing to do with you know,
right.
So that's, you know, because when we were on forum together that day, you know, the host kept being like, well, what, you know, online, that's not so bad. You guys are just moving to online. And it seemed like a nice way to sort of whitewash and soften the reality of the deal. So it just seems like from the get-go, there's been so many mistruths and so much arrogance in the way that this has been handled. And I think that it's disrespectful to the community, right?
Yeah, and I don't intend to be disrespectful, and mm-hmm. I don't intend ever to say to say anything that isn't true.
Okay.
So that's not my intent.
You didn't look at their press release?
I believe me, I looked at the press release because it was like, it wasn't like writing a press release, it was like making sausage because there were so many organizations involved
right.
in it. But, you know, did I understand or know what they were doing online? No, they just said
that
they were
transitioning to
online.
If you cared about the future of this community and those served by it, it seems like you would have actually wanted to sort of make sure that was in place. Like, that's what seems to me so puzzling about this deal, is that there was no plan afterwards. What do you do with the only Cantonese news broadcasting in San Francisco that gets taken off the air? Like, there was no plan. What do you do for the only and longest running senior news and disability report?
Yeah, and that's legitimate criticism. It's legitimate.
And the other thing that seemed troubling on the 18th was right as a sale, right when we found out, minutes after, this SF Symphony already had a statement. So how involved were they, and how much did they know? Because they obviously knew before we did.
We talk to them a day in advance, just to let them know that the change was happening because it would affect their broadcast. But that was about it.
You didn't think it would affect our broadcast?
Oh, we knew it would. But again...
But you didn't let us know.
Yeah, it was.
See, that's the part where
I have trouble because
all that talking to Steve Runyon and all that, you're talking about developing a relationship with USF, but you're not talking about the community actually having a chance to keep the station. See, it all bodes well with you coming in and purchasing it. What about us?
Yeah.
You see, we didn't have a chance.
Yeah,
and that's the problem that I have.
And I think it speaks to sort of what we've seen this year with the Occupy movement, right? It's mimicking now, I think, on the sort of faux nonprofit side of the world, where it's the small percentage making these big decisions that then shut voices out. And I think that we have a responsibility, and I think that deep down you know that too, and that there's also that difference between, you know, sometimes you can get away with something, or you can maybe technically bend the rules or get up enough different organizations to hide behind, but then at the end of the day, there's also that question is what I'm doing right, you know? And I think that Entercom and KDFC and USF haven't done what is right.
Yeah, and I can understand that point of view. For me, part of what I have to think about, to go back to your question, too, is what's the relationship? You know, USF had the relationship with KUSF. So it was their decision to make how they wanted to handle that relationship. It wasn't mine.
Right, but you say that you have a strong care for community radio.
That's passing the buck.
Right, and so you're a smart person, and you know how college and community radio stations run, and you know that, and that's why there's a trouble for them right now, is that the administrations with them are so out of touch, because forever it's been, you know, you kind of just, you want to stay separate from each other, and you know that the groundwork of it is by community volunteers and students. So you know that, right? And so having a discussion with Father Prevett or Steve Runyon isn't addressing the community that runs the station.
No, understandably. Has built it for all of these.
Understandably.
Years.
Right.
No, I totally understand that.
I mean, don't you think in the long run, I mean, the NCE sector on the dock is not huge. You said this, and I'm confirming it. It's not that huge.
No, it isn't.
Right? We're all fighting over crumbs because basically them, who you are subletting space from, and Clear Channel, and Infinity, and Cumulus, have bought up the majority of the dial and are running it basically as 1,400 stations all put the same. Given that, I mean, the ethical question is, do you collaborate with Entercom in order to take more of the crumbs, or is there an ethical relationship between those on the NCE sector to get the most out of that sector and to provide the largest set of services, the most diverse set of services, and basically not to try to trip each other and stuff them in a manhole? Because the question that I have here is kind of, how can an NCE sector that's under pressure anyway, because we're talking about largely being owned by institutions of higher education that have no money, survive if the motivating principle is basically going to be syndication, consolidation, and basically, you know, chopping off the head of those you are sharing this space with? I mean, I don't want you to come out. I mean, I'm on the board of the Pacifica Foundation Network. I don't want you coming after Pacifica stations. We've got to coexist in this sector.
No, absolutely.
So I'm not hearing an acknowledgement of coexisting in this sector.
Yeah, you know, I think...
So that's my question.
No, right? I think it's a great question.
How do we survive?
And I wish I could answer
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I mean, does anything survive but...
Yeah, and I hope not. I hope the answer is I hope not. I hope there is a way that we... You know, I would love for there to be a way that we could have a bigger, broader discussion about the non-commercial educational side of the
that would
equation.
Be good. I mean, in the long
and I'm all for it. So if you know, if we want to try to do that and pull that together, I'll definitely help with that, and we'll get some people involved in it, because I think it would be really useful and valuable. And I think new technologies certainly offer an opportunity there, because we don't have in the new technology world commercial, non-commercial. You know, we don't have sort of the separation of bandwidth, and there's an opportunity there down the line, but that's further, that's 10, 15 years down the line.
you described KUSF as hyper local.
Right.
And of course that word is not necessarily an insult, but I just want to point out
it's not at all.
The KUSF, well, it was used as a characterization to say that it was somehow of less value.
No, I don't mean that at all.
KUSF is a 3,000 watt signal. By design, it is meant to serve the city of San Francisco
Correct.
And surrounding areas. You are, in fact, patching together multiple stations in order to try to get a signal that can actually serve all of Northern California. In a sense, isn't this really misusing what is essentially a hyper-local signal by its nature because of the size that it is in order to try to patch together a northern, a much larger, because I guess you couldn't get a $50,000, a 50,000 watt signal as you would have liked.
No, it would have been $50 million. So
you're basically pulling out something meant to serve a hyper-local community to use it for this purpose. So isn't that a statement on your part that somehow...
It's misleading.
What's the opposite of hyperlocal? Non-hyperlocal programming is more valuable than hyperlocal programming?
Yeah,
is that
I mean,
what you're saying?
I don't feel that way, but I can
I'm
see...
I'm not sure the FCC would agree.
Yeah, I'm not, but I see your point. I see your point. But I don't feel that way, because I think local is really important. And I think one of the things, that I looked at in writing my project for my doctorate was... looking at what it does local matter, because some people say local doesn't matter, it's a global community, all that kind of stuff. And that's one of the things I wanted to really look at closely. And all the research indicates that local is still incredibly important.
How many local signals in this Northern California classical music empire before it's all over?
If we get one more in the South Bay and the Peninsula, I'll be a happy camper.
I just want to say one thing about the hyperlocal characterization also is it seems like by defining something as hyperlocal, you're more able to call what you do local, whereas this is really just a local radio station.
No, I think
and
I think
to bring up this new term
value.
That's becomes more commonly used, it makes it seem like this is like this freakish hyperlocal serving a small market.
I think there's
market,
huge value
but I don't know.
To that. There's
That's
huge
true.
Value to
Especially
that.
Especially in the case of KUSF.
When we've got
more
global,
so than other college radio stations.
Yeah, no, totally. When we've got, global communication and we have a better sense than we ever have previously of what's going on in Afghanistan right now or Burma, now Myanmar, a lot of people say the local community isn't important. But the local community is where we all live. It's where we live and where we spend most of our time. And that's still really important. So from my view, services, we need services all along the spectrum. We need local community organizations all the way up to organizations that are looking at the whole world and saying what are the issues and trends that the world has to deal with and focus on. So I think it's all important, including the local. So trust me, I'm a believer in and we need the local and the community. That's good criticism. But what I meant is to say that KUSF wasn't a service that had as its mission serving the entire Bay Area. Your mission was the city of San Francisco, and that's what you focused on and did well.
And that's what that signal was.
Exactly.
When it came to be, that's what it was.
Yeah.
That's what its purpose was. So we were serving the purpose of it.
So no, I'm happy to talk with you anytime. I'm not, and any questions you have, call me, email me. Erwin's got all my contact information and, so feel free. I'm not, every email I've gotten about KUSF I've responded to. So I don't want to be like, the distant enemy figure. We're in the midst of this is a conflict, but it doesn't have to be a conflict where we can't talk.
And one way that I think we could figure out a way to work together is because of how much you care, you said that you care about this community and you care about our, us getting back on the airwaves is really kind of putting your money where your mouth is, right? And, I think it would be a really good move and gesture and show that, talk the talk, to have CPRN and maybe Entercom help put up some fronts of money to help us get back on the terrestrial dial. Is that something that you would be into?
I'd be very willing to help you figure that out. count me in.
Okay. So you think that
I
you
do fundraising. You know,
no, but
I do.
Right, but directly. I'm saying directly getting money from CPRN and Entercom.
There are some legal issues with that, but there are. But again, we can talk about that, and I'd be very willing to help see what we can do to help keep KUSF, maybe not in exile anymore, but out of exile.
But you knew very well that there's no other spots on the dial, right, in San Francisco. That's why our fight and our FCC battle is so important, because 90.3 is really the only place up for grabs.
True. But there may be things we can do, including putting your signal on HD.
Right. Well, that
and giving people free HD radios. There may be things that we can do to help.
What if we switched it? What if we said, you know what? You guys can get HD. Right? So, I mean, it's interesting when those arguments come up when everyone says, HD's not that bad. Well, why don't you want HD? And when we were on forum, I wanted to say, if online's not so bad, why don't you guys just do online only? Right? So it's interesting we use these arguments one way, but then we don't want to take them.
No.
Right?
Absolutely. But I'm just saying...
Right.
If you want me to, you know, anything
I think over the HD, a chunk of that 1.4 million that you guys have operated on this year, or the 3.75 to buy the station, then maybe we could look at, you know, finding a spot somewhere on the dial. But yeah, let's keep that those lines of communication open for sure.
Absolutely. Cool. But I appreciate having a chance to talk with you, so I'm glad.
Thanks for talking.